Recording in progress.
Testing the closed captions. They're there.
That's cool.
I wanted to better mute that. No, mute your computer. I wanted to let you all know, folks who are on the Zoom, to please sign in the chat as you have done for 3 years. We very much appreciate it. We are waiting for one more person to come into the physical room so that we have a quorum and can call the meeting. But because it's already past 5:45, there's a chance we will just have a discussion and not a meeting. But if we do get a quorum, Matt Hausman, I see that you're here, and we will be sure to talk about letting you in if it's a full meeting, but right now we can't. So.
You want to just go over the timeline while we wait?
Yeah. Okay.
So our next meeting would be...
I'm going to put it on the screen so folks can see it. Okay. So
next week.
Well, we had canceled it.
Okay, that's what I thought, because it was still on the list. That's what I was
thinking. Yeah. So we had canceled. Oh, that's next month.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at October. Sorry. I'm thinking already in next month. Yeah.
You can turn your mic on. You can talk.
It's being recorded, but yeah.
So they can hear what you're saying.
So our next meeting will be October 18th here.
Yeah, that's, thank you. Because we had scheduled a study session, but we didn't really need it. And now there's a question. We have a couple folks are asking that we cancel the October 25th joint meeting. So that's something you and I can talk about after and just... We had an idea for what to do with that meeting. It may not work out. And then it's 3 days before the expo, so it might be good for us just to focus on the expo. Anyway.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to have any comments other than I hope everybody is feeling okay and everyone gets better who's sick. I know it's that time of year, all the kids are back in school, all the germs are spreading, there's less sunlight. Make sure everyone takes their vitamin D. Help fight off infections. I guess I didn't see anything wrong with like the minutes from the previous meetings or the vendor list when I was looking at it before the meeting. I don't know if anyone had any questions about those.
So we are going to have a board discussion for you all on the Zoom. We do not have a quorum right now, so we're not calling a meeting, so we're not going to take action on anything, but we will discuss. Okay.
Yeah, we can look at the minutes first, but I didn't see anything there that needed to be changed. It looked good to me, but.
I thought everything looked fine also.
And then we can go on to the vendor list. And again, yeah, that looked fine to me as well.
Hey, Stephanie, why don't you talk to us through the Zoom? We can hear you. Stephanie has advised that we need to call the meeting to order, have a public record of the roll call, et cetera.
Oh, and even if we don't have a quorum?
Yeah,
okay.
And she's on the meeting. So.
Yeah, sorry. I was getting my phone.
All right, I'll call to order the Champaign County Mental Health Board meeting September 20th, 2023. And he said we need a roll call. Okay, can I get a roll call, please?
Lisa Liggins Chambers.
Present.
Daphne Maurer. Molly McClay.
Present.
Joe Omosagie.
Here.
Elaine Plencia. Jen Straub. James Brandel. Matt Hausman.
Remote.
John Paul Joachim.
Here. Thanks. So with that, we're not going to have a quorum, so we are going, like Lynn said, we're going to have a discussion today of the items on the agenda. We won't be able to take any votes on anything, so we'll just go through what we can and then save everything for the next meeting. Obviously, we'll probably have to do a special session for one of the items that is more time sensitive.
I'll make a suggestion about that one when we get to it.
Awesome.
I'm thinking about it.
All right.
Okay.
Do we have to go through everything again, or I guess we don't need to because it's discussion, right? So,
I'm going to try to get caught up.
Yeah. So the next thing was the staff reports, and basically, you know, it seems like everyone has been very busy since the last meeting. I didn't know if, did AIR artists sell their items at the Disability Expo last year?
They did, and Stephanie has put together, she's in her report it says 10 artists have agreed to participate. So just so you all know, all of the staff are on the, either here or on the Zoom. So if you have questions about this, you know, people will probably be able to answer. But I see it right there.
Oh, and I guess I don't know, I can't remember if it's still on the agenda or not, the Disability Expo, but is there a sign up yet for that? Are you going to just send that out to us so we can sign up for it? Because I don't think I've signed up for that yet.
Chandra, is the volunteer sign up available yet, or are y'all still putting that together? They were looking for lists of specific tasks, so they might not have put it on.
Yes, we do have it available. I can make sure that it gets sent out.
Awesome, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. With that, we can move on to the new business. And then, so the first thing is the Mental Health Board's allocation priorities and decision support criteria. So there's no action needed on that, but if you want to discuss that a little bit.
So there are three of these now. There's one specific to the DD board, which they received today. Then there's this one specific to the Mental Health Board, and then the DD Special Initiatives one. So you have two priorities documents in your packet, since you have authority over Mental Health Board Fund and the DD Special Initiatives Fund. We worked on these, like, DD Special Initiatives first, then the DD one, and then the Mental Health Board one. So there's a lot of overlap. There's sort of an evolution of certain ideas through them. We relied pretty heavily on the input from those self-advocates last month, just because that's like gold. Even if they might not have said anything to you that was a surprise, the fact that they were able to say it is really important. And we have a very hard time getting direct input from people who receive services. So I thought, we got it. Let's lean into it. And so some of the things they talked about actually ended up in every priorities memo. And an observation that they made in writing and in person was about Champaign County not being welcoming or inclusive to people with disabilities. And since that, I've also heard from some provider agencies who are, you know, still having a difficult time recruiting and retaining staff, that one of the problems is that Champaign County is not a very welcoming and inclusive community. So that is a really important observation for us to hang on to and share with our other partners who have anything to do with the attitude and culture of Champaign County, which I think we all do. So anyway, so that shows up in here a lot. Leon and I talked about this quite a bit. We did not change the broad priority categories for you to consider for PY25. We kept them the same as PY24, and those have been roughly similar across years. But we did change the shape of them, underneath the title quite a lot. So, sort of to take into account some of the things we've learned this last year, we're still learning from the pandemic, and some of what we're learning is a little bit of a surprise, like the withdrawal of funding for domestic violence programs, the state and federal funding for those, kind of drying up, was it really a surprise? And for a community like ours, where there's so much data showing that is a particular problem here, and it's costing, other publicly funded systems a lot of money, and it's costing people their health and wellness. So we may be kind of beefing that priority up a little bit. So that's just an example. Anyway, this is a first draft. We've sent it out to a whole lot of other people for feedback. We've already gotten some feedback, mostly of in the nature of this thing is important to me, thank you for putting it in there, or, build this up. But no, corrections or objections yet. So you all are, you can talk about it today, or you can email Leon and me any thoughts that you have on this. We'll present you with a final draft in November. And if we're able to, if the board agrees to a final version in November, then we can start the application process quite a bit earlier this year, just giving the agencies more time on this side of the year, because we can't seem to add more time on the other side of the year. It cuts into your ability to really give them a review. So anyway, that's the kind of... Did I miss anything, Leon? I'm going to let you talk.
No, I think you covered everything. This was, I would say, intense. You and I kind of went back and forth on several points here, but no, I think you did a good job, or we did a good job of capturing what's going on currently.
Yeah, I mean, I think, when we had the advocates come and meet with us at the last meeting, I think that was very valuable. And, I think it would be nice for other boards, like the city of Champaign, city of Urbana, Rantoul, to have meetings and talk about what they could do on city levels and township levels to make it more welcoming. Obviously, the county board can do that as well. For our funds, we have the special initiatives fund. I think it'll be interesting to see what things come up that we can discuss, what applications come up that we can discuss funding that may be helpful, at least in bridging some of that gap. And so it's something that probably will take a lot of advocacy and a lot of work with several agencies and boards to hopefully change that situation here in the county. But yeah.
Thank you. That's a good point. We also kind of have the reality behind it of service capacity. Like if the agencies that you're currently funding are having a hard time retaining and keeping staff in all sorts of different roles, is that going to get easier with, the state does not have a positive budget forecast for next year? So, and, our own, I've been warned by the previous budget director here to expect lower increases or even no increases in the future. So I don't know how we meet an increased demand and a wider variety of service needs without a qualified workforce. And if we can't pay people for their work,
Mm-hmm.
So, So I think those things are still really real, and I won't be surprised if we don't get a lot of applications for special projects in the special initiatives. One thing we spent a ton of time on this. The best value, this set of criteria used to be called overarching considerations, and then we thought, why don't we talk about what it really means? This is how you, with whatever you're applying to do, these are the extras that we want to see that will help us understand, like, what's a good value to Champaign County and financial clarity and relationship between the services that are proposed and the money to be spent. It's super important. Then, like, putting people first in their own service planning is, you know, that's kind of hard to do in all the sectors, but it works better. And I mean, we have lots and lots of evidence in this community of what happens when you don't let people guide their own service plan. So, I mean, they stop showing up for services, for one. So then there's the role of stigma. And we did sort of put these into an order of like most important. I missed disparities in access and care, and that's really huge. And that is, you know, thanks to the self-advocates for talking about that too. And then later on in our list is that hopefully that services would not be disrupted again by a public health concern, since especially services to people who are not very well connected in the first place. And then in the unique features, which I think all of the programs do a good job of explaining what's unique about them, but it's the kind of other stuff that we want to build up. And then these final, the expectations for minimal responsiveness are slightly different. Process considerations are almost the same as prior years. And then for all three priorities documents, that whole thing from best values on down is identical. So anyway. So this is the...
Lynn, I did have a thought as I was looking through the special initiatives memo. Because as you pointed out about the fact that this is kind of a one-time bucket of money that we have, and we mentioned the self-advocates, and we did talk during that study session about some kind of a catch-all resource page or something like that, specifically for DD. That could be one where it would be an upfront cost and minimal. So we want, so if there is anyone, I know you sent out that email to a couple of agencies last month, but I think that would be one if we could encourage somebody who'd want to take that on. I think this would be a great opportunity for them.
Okay. Thank you so much for raising that question. So I'm going to spoil the surprise for what I was thinking we could do in October. I sent an email to the self-advocates groups asking about that. If that would be, because we have a resource directory that's specific to disabilities. It just has like a name that might be, you know, hard to remember. And then there's also 211, which has every resource in Champaign County listed. And then there are, you know, a lot of the things those guys were talking about were like park district events or things that anyone in the community can attend. It's just not easy to find the information, and they might want additional information. So I asked them about that idea specifically, like how about a website that you guys kind of design? If it could have a really, you know, a website name that's clear to you, and you participate in the design, and it just links to all these other sites that have all that information. Would you like to do that? Well, they can't get back to me because they're too busy doing presentations to other community groups throughout the fall. Isn't that a great reason not to be able to answer me? I love that so much. But then I talked to our website developer, the person who does the Expo site and the Air site, and she would love to do a project like that. So it wouldn't be very expensive. It could even come out of our administrative budget and not be a special initiatives project, but just, you know, to respond directly and immediately to that issue that they raised. Because you're right, that's, if they put it together, if they like it and they're going to use it, and she wants it. She said, I would do it, but only if they would direct it. And I'm like, okay, you're the right, you know. So, it would be a fun discussion to have if we could get them to come back and ask them directly. So, but they might not be ready when I'm ready, which is now.
Of course. Okay, well, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, I think we can go on to the allocations charts on 94 through 124.
Is this like the most fun that you've ever seen? It was so fun for me.
It's just very easy to digest, I feel like. And it's funny, like on 96, it says like appropriation by type of service, and there's like outpatient, crisis prevention, peer support, and screen. I mean, a lot of outpatient is prevention. It's not tertiary care.
Yeah.
So I think of that as good, because when I think about, you know, where you're getting your the most effective use for the funding, it's going to be prevention. So I'm glad that we are spending a lot on that. Obviously, it's important to spend on crisis intervention, and we are spending a good chunk on that, about a quarter of the funding. But I'm glad to see a lot of the money is going towards prevention.
And a lot of inpatient and crisis care is and should be the business of the state and federal funders. So.
Well, I guess not just prevention. I mean primary care. Primary care and prevention, yeah.
So if you're looking at the revenue charts, I was thinking, like, so nobody's asked so far, and maybe you all aren't even going to ask, like, why? Or, like, what did you learn from this? And I wanted to tell you that the why is, this is something I started to do about 3 years ago at the request of a former mental health board member. I never finished it. It was the year that we got all that ARPA money. So I started doing it, and then we had more money. And I was like, I don't have the time to redo all these charts. And no one was really that interested by then. But we've started meeting with the other local funders, and they asked about something like this. Oh, if only someone would put together charts that showed where the agencies are getting their funding, then we would understand who's vulnerable if we all took a hit at once. Because that happens. Like, Champaign County's economy can actually just, like, turn all of it. So United Way and the cities and we and the county would all have decreases in funding. So I did it. I started doing it for them, and it was so much fun. And it allows you to see a couple other things. In previous years, we would be looking for something like, if 90% of an agency's funding is from the state, then they are, like, about to get walked off the plank because the state was such an unreliable payer. But that has not been true in recent years. So now what we can see is, if you have kind of a spread of local and larger funding sources, you can survive the hit from any direction. But that all that ARPA money is in here, and all that ARPA money is going away next year. So those, you know, a lot of organizations have state or city or county ARPA funds right now. So that is one risk that we're going to see next year. But anyway, that's what we learned. Also, we can tell from this, we can tell if an agency has a funder like the state of Illinois, then they're also going to be licensed by the state of Illinois, which changes what we have to look for. So if they don't have another accreditor or license, then we have to look for more standard operating procedures and policies and stuff like that. So, okay.
So I don't know if you know, because it might have been before you were here. I was probably obviously before you were here, but what happened in, 2008 after the crash, with funding, with agencies and things like that?
So I was here. I came here in 2009, and the consequences of 2008 hit Champaign County a little bit later than other communities because of the sources of revenue. The biggest revenue here is education, healthcare, and a lot of that is tied to the state. So it took a while for the economic downturn to impact Champaign County. So it impacted Champaign County about 4 months after I started this job, and we talk about this often, that there's language in the contracts about if something happens and we have less money than we've agreed to spend, we will make reductions. That the director has the discretion to make reductions. But what we did then was not just go through and cut everything. We engaged the agencies to ask which programs could be cut and by what percentage. And so it was, I don't know how people were able to do that. That's so hard, but they did, rather than us making the cuts. So, and it's never happened since.
Wait, there was a time during Rauner where there was a lot of funding. Was that time, or when a lot of agencies went away?
Yeah.
Was that time? I can't remember if that was time. That was that time.
It was a few years later.
Later,
it was a little later, probably closer to, I think, okay. Rauner was elected in 10. So.
And then what happened to the agencies during that time when the state decided to cut funding?
Went away.
We lost detox. That's when we lost detox. So that was not funded by the mental health board. It wasn't that we didn't have a constriction of funding. The agencies lost funding from the larger sources. So that was... It was detox and maybe other substance use services. You guys were involved. You might know better than I where those hits were. But I think there were also, we lost youth programs like the area projects.
Yeah.
And what the Rauner administration did was a review of contracts by name. And if the names weren't obvious or looked like just fluff, they just eliminated the programs. So... What did they call it? It was a psychiatry add-on. I can't remember what it was called, but that was lost. And so the mental health board moved some money into psychiatry. We had not funded psychiatry because that is lots of payers cover psychiatry. What was that called? Every community mental health agency had some money from that grant line.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Psychiatry Plus or something like that. I wish I could remember. But so that was eliminated. I think some autism programs were eliminated, at least temporarily. And so the mental health board filled in that one gap, the psychiatry. I think our community has never recovered from losing detox that. And that's probably true around the state. And we are surrounded by communities that lost basically their entire behavioral health system during that 2 years of no funding.
Yeah.
And they may never be able to get it back because they tend to be less populous, more land. It's very hard to do crisis services in places like that.
That's when Snowball finally died, during Rauner. So,
I mean, the only reason I ask is, there's two main things that I see then for the future, just looking at these pie charts of who is vulnerable for agencies not being able to function. And so one is an economic downturn that affects our funding capabilities, and another one is state government changing their minds on what they want to fund. And so those two groups are probably, like you said, the biggest risk, and those are the ways in which they are likely to lose funding. So just looking at them, just keeping in mind what we want to try to fund and keep thriving as long as we can, but just knowing who's going to be the most at risk, like you said.
We met yesterday. The State Association Legislative Committee met yesterday, and we had an update on the state budget. And one of the things they were talking about was it's not looking good for restoring those domestic violence funds. That really surprises me. It just seems like this is such an easy case to make for the merit of that funding. But they were pretty dour about it. We were just talking about threats. And, you know, what kind of legislation we'd like to support next year. So I'm sure that there will be more news about things like that. And it might be that, I mean, maybe you're hearing other things already, but I don't know. There is a steep rise in this state and a bunch of other states in referrals for forensic evaluation, psych evaluations, and other systems that are less familiar with community behavioral health are coming up with solutions such as, well, we'll just hire a psychiatrist. And so then the response is like, if there was one hanging out, secretly waiting to be hired, they would be working. So we're getting into some weird territory with, you know, other systems that are really affected by untreated mental health issues, you know, don't know enough to get together and collaborate yet, but hopefully that will change. So
now for the forensic psych eval, is that more for I know the refugee community, the immigration community that we funded, the agency for them to be able to perform more forensic psych evaluations. Is there other groups that need that as well?
So what I'm hearing about is more like in the state, the correctional and law enforcement space, like competency to stand trial is the real, and this is across the country, it's not just here, but we've all been watching the shortage of psychiatrists and psychologists. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of, you get what you pay for, right? You don't pay for it, you don't get it, you know? Well, as a community, as a country, as a state, we don't tend to value social services, you know, and that's unfortunate. So same thing with teachers and nurses and a lot of other fields, social work and a lot of other things. So,
but it seems that, you know, if the state, who's had the primary responsibility for supporting those systems, isn't hiring enough psychiatrists, it doesn't mean that the mental health board can. And there may begin to be more pressure on you to fund things that aren't happening, but they're not happening not because there hasn't been funding for them. They're happening because there's not staff. So I think that's a really great threat as well. Yeah.
I mean, I think the other thing, too, is people that – so if you look at doctors, psychiatrists are one of the lowest paid of doctors. It's usually psychiatry, primary care, family medicine, pediatrics, adult medicine, they're the lower paid. And then it's everybody else, anyone who does anything surgical, dermatology, radiology, they get paid a lot more. And when you go into med school, especially nowadays, especially in the state of Illinois, when I was in school, it was between $250,000 to $400,000 most med students would go into debt. And so, yeah, you're going to make six figures as a psychiatrist, but if your interest rate's 7% on $300,000, and that's not including undergrad, and you're making $120,000 a year, plus you got to pay for living expenses, you're losing that on taxes, and then the interest rate, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make financial sense for you to do that when you can go and work in private practice and make a lot more money. And so then working for as a physician where you're seeing Medicaid patients and getting paid a lot less and being reimbursed a lot less, you have less of an incentive. And even if you want to do it financially, it strains you until you're able to pay off your loans and be able to survive. So once you have no loans, then it's fine. And there are some repayment programs if you work in like a rural setting or some other settings, but that payment program or those programs are usually you have to, like when I was in med school, you had to already commit that you were going to work in a rural setting, for example. And if you ended up changing your mind later, you had to pay it all back right away, which you can't do. So you had to go get like private loans somewhere else. Yeah. And so it's not some of these things aren't realistic. And so if you go work somewhere else in a rural setting, you may not have the support you may need. You may not want to go work in those areas because you're not from those areas. And so it's just the lifestyle after you've already been in school for all until you're 30 years old to go work somewhere that you don't have family, you don't have friends. It's just not, there's not an incentive. There's all those things going against that. So
we have a system that doesn't really care about the public good. And so that's what we're reaping right now, because the public good means we all put into it and then we're supposed to benefit from it. But until we want to change the overriding system, and which I don't think we have the stomach for, we are going to, if you need services and you can't afford services, you will do without.
And I think something else we need to look at in the community is the hiring of minority staff. I mean, for example, there are, you know, psychologists of color in the area not able to gain employment. You know, I live in Champaign, I'll put this out in the public, but I don't work in Champaign County, for example. You know, and I think school districts here, you know, community agencies, they need to be open, you know, to hiring staff who do not fit a certain profile, you know, which is one of the problems. So it's low pay, but it's also a lack of wanting. It's different when, you know, agencies say, yes, we want diversity, but then the diversity is here and they ignore it. They don't hire us. You know, they turn the other cheek. They hired a person who's non-minority. So if we want to get to the heart of the problem in the area, well, one of the problems is, you know, if you're a minority psychologist, even at the PhD level like me, you're just not able to get hired here. You know, so if we're going to put it all out, you know, what's going on in Champaign, that's a huge part of it. You know, the diversity element, they don't want the diversity. You know, and that is a problem throughout, you know, the country in general. You know, there's this, you know, statement that I hear a lot. There's a shortage of school psychologists. There's a shortage of psychologists. There's a shortage of psychiatrists. So we're here. And everybody, when I read research, you know, different news media, I just corrected someone in the New York Times who said, you know, there aren't enough minority psychologists, and I corrected him and said, yes, it is. We're not getting hired, you know, and that's the same effect that happens here in Champaign County. So, you know, they want money to get approved to help with these things. Well, when you get the money, what are you doing with it? Because I know a lot of psychologists here that are capable of working for these organizations, but they are not hiring them.
So we're into performative DEI. It becomes a question of how do we perform to show the world that we are doing this, but we're not actually retaining them. You might get hired, but the environment isn't conducive for you staying longer. And so if it's performative, it's not helping us.
Well, I have a lot to say about this. Sorry, guys. I mean, I want to piggyback off of that. That's right, because I actually had an organization, a director in the area tell me, I don't know what to do with you. You know, I just don't know what to do with you. I've never worked with anybody black before, so I don't know what to do. So
it does still happen.
Yeah, and this was just, you know, 2-3 years ago, and I kind of thought, now, wait a minute, this is not 1970. I'm sorry, but, you know, I put these things out there because this is exactly what we need to discuss. You know, we need to put these things on the table if you want more assistance with the number of, you know, incarcerated individuals who need these forensic evaluations, then you have to be open to hiring those of us that can actually do them. That's because I have a lot to say, okay.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. No, thank you for your comments.
I would say
yeah. You can keep going, yeah.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Do you want to do competency?
Like, get her off of the mic.
Do you want to do competency evaluations? I think the state actually does need to put some money into that. There's what I've heard from the statewide behavioral health administrator for the courts, for the state courts, is that there's a steep rise in the need for forensic evals and specifically competency.
Only if it involves children. Mm-mm. I'm not forensic. No.
Aha, Jim Hamilton, the clinical director from Promise Healthcare, says the FQHC rate for a psychologist is $76, the same as a licensed clinical social worker or LCPC. For medical provider, psych or psych and nurse practitioner is $162. We can't afford to provide clinical psychology at those rates.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim.
Absolutely. I've been through that too, Jim. Thank you. Yes, where I've been told I can't pay you more than I would a social worker. So, yeah.
Can't even pay those rates, though. Right? They can't pay $160 an hour.
They can.
Oh, they can?
For a medical provider?
Yeah, for a medical provider.
Yeah. 162. They can't get close to that. They can do $76.
No, say that again. So, are they paying for? So, for psychiatrists, are they paying? Are they able to pay close to 162?
Can I ask Jim to speak?
Oh yeah, Jim. That'd be good.
Hey Jim, why don't you speak to us and just to clarify? We got it, Jim. Thanks.
Okay, there. So we get a rate, and that rate is established by the state of Illinois, HHS, I think, in conjunction with HRSA, and it's different for different communities. Like the rate may be different for an FQHC in Kankakee or Rockford, but we get a rate. And we're told what our rate of reimbursement is going to be. We get a behavioral health rate. And right now that's currently, I think, $76. I might be off by a dollar or two. And we get a medical rate. Medical rate's like 162 or 163, somewhere right in there, close. Psychiatrists, psychiatric nurse practitioners, psychiatric physician assistants are considered medical, so we can bill at that rate and get that 162. Psychologists are not considered medical, they're considered behavioral health, and they get the behavioral health rate, which I see as problematic because although some psychologists do psychotherapy and counseling and those kinds of things, there's lots of other things that they do as well, psychological testing, assessment, things like that.
And the state requires us to be licensed just like physicians, and another reason why there may be a shortage is because of the licensing standards in this state. They are strict for psychologists, and I don't know if you all know that, but they really are very strict.
I mean, it seems like the psychiatry, the physician rate is actually very good if it's 162, but I don't know if that includes, if that's their salary or if that's what the clinic gets reimbursed, and then they take off of that for like the building fees and the administrative fees, like the staff fees, and you know.
Are there rates inclusive?
Yeah, that's what the agency gets. That isn't what the psychiatrist gets.
That's what the psychiatrist's salary is. Yeah.
And so the psychiatrist salary comes out of that, and the lights and the heat and all that comes out. So, yeah.
Because I was going to say, if the psychiatrist salary is $160 an hour, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. But, yeah, that's definitely not the case then.
I think the differences between the medical rate and the behavioral health rate overall, like, I mean, that is such a stark difference that just illuminates this continued devaluation of mental health, like, in our society.
But then also keep in mind that $76 an hour is not the salary of the psychologist. That's what the whole company gets, and then you have to take away the building costs, the administrative costs, like dealing with the insurance and the staff costs and the utility and all that stuff and taxes and everything. And after all that, then the psychologist gets paid too. You know, so maybe you're looking at like half or two thirds of that, you know, not even.
Right. That's exactly right. That's the agency rate and not the provider rate.
So, yeah, so it's very difficult, very difficult.
I mean,
yeah. But it always impresses me how the agencies still, like, they thrive despite all that adversity, and the people that work for these agencies, like, still do what they do and provide the care they do. And, you know, it's because they want to help people. Like, all of us here want to help people, and then to, like, there's so many people in this state and in this county that sacrifice parts of their lives, you know, either financially or emotionally, or just like they get burned. A lot of people get burned out because they want to do good. But like, people shouldn't have to sacrifice to do good. You know, they should just have to do their job. They should just have to do what they're supposed to do. We shouldn't be asking them to give things up, you know. But well, I don't want to get stuck on this. We could probably be here all night doing that.
This is
so,
a great discussion.
Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? Or you want to go to the agency request for consideration?
We should probably talk about it. That's what she and I were talking about.
Oh, okay. Okay.
At least discuss it and then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can go to page 125 then. So it's the Promise Healthcare Audit Delay agency request.
Leon, do you want to, you prepared this. You don't want to. Okay, it's late. So here's what I would like to say. The agency got a hold of Leon and me quite early to let us know about this problem. This had to do with a staffing issue that they had in the financial management, in order to prepare for the audit to begin on time and to be completed on time. They thought they were going in one direction, but then when they lost that staff person, they recognized that things weren't quite as audit ready. So they were really straightforward with us. They gave us plenty of notice. So the fact that you can't act on this today, the two contracts will be automatically canceled October 1st. I think it's going to be very difficult for us to schedule a special meeting before October 1st, because really the only time we've been talking about how to do that we could do it is Monday during the day. And if we can't get a quorum during the regular time, you know, this is probably a seasonal issue and a lot of people are sick. So I don't know that by next Monday it would be easier. So what I would say is, like, it is a risk for us. It's a risk that we can't tell them, yes, we'll honor the contract from October 1st on. But it's not unheard of for you to make retroactive decisions. That's happened before. It's just, it's a risk for them and it's a risk for us. You know, the risk is actually more on them. If you all decide not to grant them a waiver of the automatic cancellation as of October 1st, then what happens is they could continue to provide the services according to the contracts and incur the expenses and then not get paid. So anyway, so it's kind of, it's pretty serious, but I'm not sure we can get anything together. You have to give 48 hours notice for a special meeting. We have to prepare the documents and post them 48 hours in advance. So I can't just start the 48-hour timer right now.
Is it 48 business hours? Like Saturday and Sunday don't count if it's Monday, right? Or does that still count?
Oh, hey, Stephanie, is it 48 business hours?
No, it's just 48 hours.
Good to know.
Okay. So, and to be like perfectly honest, I'm going to be out of town from Monday night through October 7, and just setting up for a meeting has been really difficult because of the new, just to run a hybrid meeting. So if you wanted to do a meeting without me, which I think I'm supposed to be here for all your meetings, but if you wanted to do a meeting without me prior to October 1st, it has to be next week. It could be during the time the study session was set for, but I would not recommend trying to do the Zoom part because it's never been easy, and we've had all hands on deck every time. Well, except once, right? Like, it's just, I really would hate to leave you with that next week, but you could do this, you could run this meeting without the Zoom part. No sweat, right?
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, so my suggestion would be wait till I get back. But
as long as Promise is okay with that, because they're the ones that are running the risk.
That's right.
You know, I mean, from my perspective, this is obviously not a vote because we can't vote right now, but I would approve to extend the deadline. Obviously, I'd give them more time than just November 30th, so at least December 30th was what I would extend it to, but we would have that discussion at whenever we have our meeting next month.
So I guess even though we're not doing a vote, you could each share an opinion so we could have a sense, and Matt Hausman is also on this call and could share an opinion, and Promise could react to that. The easiest thing is to wait till October 18th.
So yeah.
Like, that's easy because we're ready to do this all again. That's just, it's.
So, yeah, I mean, my obviously we're not voting, but my vote would be to approve the waiver. I don't know what everyone else's opinions are.
I'm fine with waiving it.
I would also approve the waiver, and I like the idea of extending it to December. I will also add that I know that I will not be in town next week if that impacts any. If there was a decision made to try to meet next week with Lynn not present, I know that I would also not be present if that starts knocking our quorum possibility down.
I think it's fair to give an extension.
Yeah, if staff thinks this is not a major issue like we've had with other agencies in the past, I think I'd be okay with the recommendation to waive.
I mean, I think the thing I like is that there's been open communication. They were straightforward with it, and I think that's what we want from agencies is to give us early notifications so we can not be surprised by things, and, we're being straightforward, and I like that. I think I would approve that for all those reasons. That's tentatively, I would...
He's jumping ahead and preparing the October board packet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think, unless we need more time, because we'd have to meet after they get the audit, right? Just or does it automatically?
What we do with an audit, I would appreciate not getting audits on New Year's Eve. It's deeply stressful to spend New Year's Eve waiting for audits and then having to review them over the next 2 days in order to determine if we can issue payments. So all of our deadlines seem to butt up right against payment deadlines or at payment dates, and we don't want to, we want people to have as much time as possible. So December 30th kind of like,
how about we do
maybe December 22?
We can do January, like, 14th, whatever the Friday is before our next, or, like, maybe the Wednesday before our next meeting in January. This way you have time to prepare for the meeting if there's an issue. I guess you need more time than just that. You need at least 8 hours.
We have to review it when it comes. So I would not wait until 2024 to receive it.
You
know, if they think they can get it to us during December, if I can at least have a day.
So how about, like, the second week of December? This way you have time before the December 20th meeting.
Well, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
If it's not an acceptable audit,
But if it's not an acceptable audit, then...
Then you might have
But what if they don't have the audit in by December 14th? That's the question, then. Because then we would have to meet...
You're right.
...and say if we need to extend it again.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, so just planning.
You're right.
It's teamwork makes the dream work, right?
That's what Thank you. So our deadline for board materials for the December 20th meeting will be... because we know you can't read these... overnight. The deadline will be December 11, which is at 9 a.m.
Okay.
For board meeting materials. So it would be kind of cool.
You want to do December 10th then?
If just an extra day. Is December 10th,
yeah. Let's do December 10th.
Okay, so maybe we should make sure.
Obviously, we're not voting on that, but but that will be our tentative plan next month when
we're
vote
just
on
planning
it.
Our next meeting. Yes. Thank you, Leon, and thank you, John, for thinking about the future. There are folks here from Promise, and they can, if this is going to be a hardship to not know until October 18th, you know, because there is a little risk. That's 3 weeks of providing services that they might not get paid for. So, okay. They're not saying anything about it. Okay.
I mean, they can also email you after if there's any issues.
I think probably this should come from Jamie and Jennifer rather than me.
Thank you.
So I will communicate your discussion back to them tomorrow morning and I encourage them to reach out to you.
That's great.
And kind of let them know what the discussion was.
Okay. Thank you. Much appreciated.
All right. Awesome. I think we got our ducks in a row on that one.
Uh-oh, here's something that you can't vote on either.
Yep, so the next thing is the old business. So we got the revised budgets of 2024.
I mean, it's a lot. There are a lot of changes from the budget you already approved. But if I just bring you this whole thing back in October 18th, it's fine. The county is on a timeline where they have to accept budgets in October, and they're probably meeting October 19th. So it could be, like, perfect. And then they have to so then it's public. So, you know, I think it's really important for them to have to know that you have approved a budget or changed one. But it's I think October 18 is fine. So if you want to talk about it now, we can, but we could just hold it for
the... I think we'll just hold off on that. Okay. So we can move on for the evaluation capacity building project.
Mm-hmm. Hello, everyone. So I am Justin Majoritis. I direct the Family Resiliency Center. I'm PI of the evaluation capacity building project, and I have very short updates today. I spoke at the last board meeting, and since that time, we're planning the group level assessment, which I talked a little bit about that we were hoping to conduct. And this is a data collection strategy that centers the voice of agency staff, where they will be involved in completing a short survey to prepare for the GLA, to develop different prompts and questions that we should be asking about that will meet their needs. And then we'll host a session designed to collect that data where actually the staff will generate the data and analyze it in the same session. And it will help to identify different needs, past successes, challenges related to evaluation, collection of data, reporting of outcomes, reports as well. And then these data and the analyses will be used to generate ideas and topics for the micro-learnings that we will develop and the one-on-one intensive technical assistance that we will provide to different agencies. And those who cannot attend the GLA, we will probably submit a survey for them to at least provide some feedback if they can't attend the session in person. I don't know if you want me to pause and have you ask any questions about the GLA.
No, I don't think we have any questions yet.
Okay, great. The other thing we've been doing has been reviewing report summaries and starting to identify possible outcome measures for some of the agencies that may not have identified outcome measures or may have identified outcome measures that were really extensive or very long-term to think about more attainable outcomes in the immediate. So we're really going through and assessing what they have reported in the past so that then we can give them more feedback and pointers in the more immediate future as we begin to think about what the intensive training is going to look like for those agencies. So we've been fortunate to receive those reports and the summaries, and so we're compiling that information so that we can provide all agencies some type of feedback about different outcome measures that we think might be useful or the ones that they're using that are really great and on point.
Awesome. Sounds great. I'm glad you're helping them work on more short-term goals so that they can know if they're making a positive change that they want to make. Thank you.
Yeah. And so those are our updates.
Awesome. All right. I think the next item is the expo.
It's coming. Yeah. So I'm just going to share. But there, you saw this last month too. So earlier in this discussion, Chandra let us know that the volunteer sign-up link is available now. It's just October 28th seems like a really long time from now, but in expo days, it's coming quick. So we want people to come just to enjoy it, but we also need some volunteers. And Chandra and her partner in the volunteer committee, I think there's two of them, have assembled a list of what the volunteer tasks would be. And then the other thing that we need are sponsors. This is Leanne and Kim and I work with Ms. Jane Sprandl on the Marketing and Sponsorship Committee, and we have learned that we have fewer large sponsors than we have had in previous years. Lots of those large sponsors are choosing smaller amounts now, and I think it has to do with, you know, it's a finite number of businesses sponsoring more stuff. And so yay for more stuff. But we may need to expand like the number of small sponsorships that we have to make up the revenue shortfall. So the sponsorship brochure is included in here in case you know of anybody. There's even like friends level, which is under $100. So this is, anyway, it's coming. And it's at Marketplace, like we did last year, which worked out really well.
Do you already have a list of the sponsors? So we're not asking the same people who've already sponsored or are already sponsoring?
That is a great question. Do we have it, Leon?
I've not.
Sorry about that. I've not seen the list. I do know that there are approximately 54 exhibitors that are already signed up to attend. The issues are still needing more volunteers, from preparing, setting up, to breaking down the event. But again, I've not seen the list. That's not to say that it's not there. I just haven't seen it.
I think we can. I'm just going to ask Dylan right now. If we can find the list of sponsors, then I'll just send it out to all board members. Mm. And then you can see where we're at. Because I think they do keep a list. We just haven't seen it in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I know so. I know Jane has it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember looking at it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. And then, oh, wait a minute. I forgot to ask. It's Halloween weekend. Is there going to be any costumes? Is there going to be candy?
We can't make Kim talk about that. She won't do it.
Is there going to be like trick-or-treating for the kids at all the exhibits? I hope there is.
There's always candy. We can't stop that from happening, but there's a costume contest.
Oh, is there? Nice. I'm sure,
that's
right?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I want to.
I mean, we wear costumes at work on Halloween, so. Yeah. Sorry, thanks. The next thing is the fourth quarter PY23 program service reports. I think it was just really good information to always have. I know who recommended putting these in here.
It was Mr. Leon Bryson.
Okay.
And he put this together.
I always feel like, I know he's not here anymore, but Julian Rappaport always is good about like data gathering and getting as much information as possible. I always try to mention that kind of stuff. So that's why I couldn't remember if it was him or not.
The DD board has been doing this for a long time, but they have so many fewer contracts than you all do. So it's a much smaller set of reports. And really, I think the big barrier for us was until recently, we did not have an easy way to print and present them. So the online application guys created this format and we like it. So it's all of a sudden it's easy. So it's really about like, does Leon have time to gather them all? And are they all in on time? Because they were due literally one day before the board packet. And so, or no, it was 1 week. So he did it, he put it together.
And I just want to say thank you to each and every staff, or agency rather, that was able to get their fourth quarter reports in on time. It makes a world of a difference for myself, and I believe for Kim on the DD side, to have those reports in on time so that we can compile this long report. But again, thank you very much. It makes a world of a difference. So keep up the good work.
It's actually like this stuff is due on a Friday at midnight, and on the Monday morning we all have to scramble to make sure everything got done in order for Chris to create payments that day. So it's way too tight of it. So when folks don't have it done and they need an extension, they can request an extension and they'll still get paid, but we have to confirm that they requested an extension. And so that's one thing about our tight deadline. Like that creates a really challenging turnaround on a Monday morning in order to process payments. The other thing is right now I'm doing some deep data analysis of the DD side because all but one of those program reports were in on time. So I can analyze the data. Leon is missing two, but the programs are so different and they report things really differently, so it's going to be a very different analysis if I can even do it, but I can't start it until everything's in, and it's not. So we might not do that this year, but this is good, right?
All right. Let's move on to the 211 quarterly update for Champaign County. I know we had a passing of the CEO, unfortunately. I feel like it's pretty consistent with previous reports that we've had. Obviously, the majority of it is still utility assistance and housing questions. I feel like as a physician, we usually get that when the weather is nice enough that they can turn off your water and turn off your electricity, and then they call the company, like the electric company or the water company, and the water company says, oh yeah, just call your doctor and say you need it for medical necessity. And it's like, well, unless you have like our own life support or like need water for a medical need, like a feeding tube or something, like we can't write a letter. And so then it's just, you know, we usually direct them to our social worker, and they help them with, you know, resources in the community. And it's just, I don't know, just hard. I feel like everybody needs water, you know. Like, I don't know who doesn't need water. Like, why do you need a medical necessity? No, like, if someone needs water, why can't they just have water?
I don't know, but it sounds like a socialist or something like that. For the richest country in the world, we shouldn't be having this conversation.
I do like the stories that they put in there. it kind of just gives you at least some idea of like the kind of conversations they have when people call. You know.
It humanizes it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With that, we can move on to agency input. If there's any agencies that are present that want to, you know, make a comment or statement, now is the time. All right. I don't know if we have any, I don't think we have any board-to-board reports, do we?
Not a board-to-board report, but on page 46, the Black Mental Health and Wellness Conference, that will be taking place at Parkland. It's coming up. I think it's open to everybody in the community. You don't have to be Black to come to it. It's from 8. It's officially starts at 8 o'clock, but the presentations do not start till 9 a.m. and runs till 3 p.m. And there'll be presentations on lots of different topics on wellness and mental health for the community, not just the Black community.
What day is the 30th?
Is it Saturday?
Oh, it's next Saturday.
Nice. Next Saturday, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. It's Saturday.
Do you have to, can you register the same day? Like if?
I think you could. I mean, you just use this okay. QR code.
Yeah.
There is something for board to board.
One other question, I know it's kind of going aside, but do you know for like, is there any opportunity for continuing education credits for certain professions?
I think there
like
are
nurses and stuff.
Yeah, I think there are. See, if you go to the QR code, you'll probably get that information there.
Okay. Because yeah. That's usually another big motivator for some people to go and do some things. So and you know, I'll have to look, but you know, is it, how much is registration?
I think it's free.
Oh, is it free? Oh, awesome.
Yeah. But I think it's free.
Okay. Well, thanks for that announcement. Go ahead.
There's something happened. I mean, we can just talk about it next month, though, but I'll just put it on the screen. This is related to board to board.
At the study session last month, one of the DD board members suggested that they take up the practice of those liaison assignments. And I think it would be like about, 500% easier for them because they fund so few agencies, like four or five. So it'd be a lot easier for them to do that. So in the effort to support just discussing it, Stephanie found these old guidelines for liaison participation, and we changed a few things to update it. And I just thought it might be interesting for y'all to see this. Like, this was the draft that she found had never been approved. This is not approved. I'm not asking for your approval. It's just kind of like something to consider, like, if that's even helpful. And the way you all have been doing the board-to-board at this point is just as available and as interested. And I think given how many there are, I think you're doing the right thing. It's just a lot. And in previous years, even before you were funding this many agencies, staff would help to cover some of those board-to-board meetings to make sure they were all covered. So if you wanted more coverage, that's something we could look at again, too. But just offering that as information, because we found it for them and revised it for you all to think about, too.
I think in the old days before the pandemic, it probably was also harder because you had to be there in person, I'm sure.
Yes.
So you had to go. Yeah. Nowadays, there's more. It's a lot of them, I feel like, a lot of them are Zoom more than before. The only thing is a lot of them are usually more talking about their financials and they're not open meetings. So I don't know, in the past when liaisons went, did they only go to more open meetings or did they go to closed meetings and just not talk about things openly, obviously, because they were in a closed
meeting? You have raised the same question the DD board raised this morning, which is, and it's related to, you know, like, I don't know if there's been any precedent yet legally, but that's a nationwide conversation. If you are a private organization receiving public funding, are you not obligated to some of the same standards that public organizations are? So we can have opinions on that, but I have not done any research on whether there are precedents or a local ordinance or a state ordinance about that. So the practice of not sharing meeting minutes because we're a private organization and not inviting our board liaisons into the closed session part, not sure that's okay. But it's certainly a waste of time. So it's like probably good if there's upfront information about, is there just only going to be 5 minutes of open session for you to take, you know, an afternoon to devote to or drive across town for? Like, that is a waste of time. A tour would be better, you know. A tour would be more informative. So, you know, I think, like, there are ways to engage, you know, from one board to the other board that might not be at their meetings. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe they're fundraisers. Maybe you get to go to their fundraiser celebration, stuff like that. So, I mean, there's other ways to do it. And I think when we talked about this prior to the pandemic, when Joe was the board president, there was some of the other mental health boards in the northern counties and townships were stopping the practice of a board-to-board liaison because there were concerns that people were expressing about bias that developed as a result of that closer relationship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you've gone to this less official liaison structure, and you might like to keep it.
Yeah, because if you went to one board meeting over and over again, they would almost seek to see you as part of their board and ask sometimes directly. But if you were to go to different board meetings and it doesn't seem as if you're just for Rosecrans or for Promise or for any of the other Boys and Girls Club or anything like that.
Oh, that was another reason you all moved to this, like, we can all do all. Yeah.
All right. I guess I would say county board input, but we don't have Jen Straub here, so she can't do that. I don't know, do we have any developmental disability board input? Than what you already told us.
What I told you, yeah. Right. They approved their budget. So of the three budgets, two are ready for us to say to the county, we're good. And then yours we can consider in October. Sweet. Then they had otherwise similar information and discussion to yours.
Good. All right. I guess board announcements and input. I feel like we kind of already did that. And then I'll just move to adjourn. We'll see you guys next.
You don't even need to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. See everybody next month. Stay healthy. Yes.